Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 190 of the Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight, joined by some wonderful guests this evening. First of all, we have with us Dave Choate at the Falcoholic himself. Dave, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great.
Terrific. And joining us right on time, Aaron Freeman at Falc Fans. Aaron, how are you doing?
Doing great, Kevin.
Yes, that was really perfect timing. I was like mid-intro right when you swooped in, so that was perfect. So great job on your part there.
It's what I do. It's what I do.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to be breaking down actual stuff, you know, here in mid-May, which is – that's not always a given in the NFL. So we've got obviously the schedule release to talk about. Some interesting tidbits from rookie minicamp. The Falcons made a trade. There was a signing. So we've actually got things to talk about for once. And just savor this moment, okay? Because it's going to be like water in the desert after this to get content. So, you know, we're just going to take advantage while we can. Starting off with the trade for wide receiver Bryan Edwards. Other than the signing or the drafting of Drake London, maybe the most impactful addition to the wide receiver core. Aaron, I'll get your take on this first because I haven't heard it. I'm sure you talked about it on your show, but I haven't heard it yet. What do you think about the addition of Bryan Edwards?
I mean, I think it's a good trade for the Falcons. I think it makes a ton of sense for the team to kick the tires on Bryan Edwards and see if he can be, their number two wide receiver. They're getting him on a rookie contract. These are the types of trades that the Falcons can realistically make, getting some guys that maybe other teams are not as sold on. You have Bryan Edwards with the Raiders, Josh McDaniels coming in with a different system, maybe wanting guys that maybe a little bit more quicker and separating. You know, he's that Patriot school, so he's all about Hunter Renfro than necessarily some of these bigger body guys like Bryan Edwards. So I think it makes sense from that perspective for the Falcons, sort of seeing like, can this guy be a legitimate number two with some potential there? I do wonder to a certain extent, like, given that Bryan Edwards played that X wide receiver role in the Raiders offense, is there a little bit too much overlap with what Drake London and we saw kind of Kyle Pitts fill that role, and we add Auden Tate to kind of fill that role as well this offseason? So it seems like the Falcons have an abundance of options at the X wide receiver position. That was the spot formerly filled by Julio Jones, the spot that AJ Brown filled in Tennessee. And so you kind of wonder if it's like Arthur Smith is like, we're just going to throw a whole bunch of stuff at the wall, and one of these guys will turn into a really good X wide receiver for us. And you wonder maybe they could spend their resources maybe getting some guys that are a little bit more complimentary, in that regard. But, you know, I think Bryan Edwards is a good player. I kind of compared him to Mohamed Sanu coming out when he was at South Carolina. Longtime Falcoholic fans and people that follow me over the years know that type of player is not necessarily a player that I'm a huge fan of stylistically. But given that the Falcons only had to give up a fifth round pick or whatever the case may be, I think that's a good get. What I'll say is, like, because of that sort of Sanu connection, you're not going to see me probably as high on the move and Bryan Edwards' potential as maybe other people will be, but I certainly think he has the potential to be an effective player for us moving forward, similar to what Sanu was and probably potentially better than what Sanu was given how young he is and still room to grow. We got Sanu when he was like 27 or whatever the case may be, and mm-hmm. Bryan Edwards is like 23. So if he's already sort of at that Sanu level, what can he be in the future? So I like the move from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And only a fifth round pick, and you get a seventh back too. I mean, sevenths, you know, who cares? But it's nice still, you know, it's an extra pick. Maybe a punter, you know, maybe get that punter hype going next year. So
we're gonna be back in those mock drafts. Getting
the punters before you know it. Yep, before you know it. Yeah, and I know you had some takes about the wide receiver depth chart that I want to get to as well, but I want to give Dave a chance to weigh in on Bryan Edwards. Dave, what did you think about that trade and the addition of Edwards to the receiving core?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what Aaron said. I think it's a smart move. It's the kind of move this team probably should be making if they're going to make a trade. You know, adding somebody who's affordable, who's young, whose best years are hopefully ahead of him, and somebody that kind of fits stylistically with what they're looking to do. So I like the trade a lot. I think that, you know, the Auden Tate contingent of the fan base maybe doesn't like this quite as much, and that's understandable because I think, you know, I know we'll get to Aaron's take on the depth chart, but he could potentially push him right off it. But I do think Edwards has a good shot of becoming this team's number two receiver in the short term. And if that turns out to be a long-term fit and he's a really good player, then great. Better than great. You gave up a fifth round pick to get him, and you got that seventh that you'll trade for something else because Terry Fontenot is allergic to making seventh round picks.
Yes. Smart man. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want us to suffer until 6 o'clock in the evening on a Saturday. So I appreciate that. But you know, if he doesn't work out and he's, you know, just a decent, you know, fourth guy on the depth chart this year and next year, you still only gave up a fifth round pick. So I think it's a smart trade. And I do appreciate, even though there's not a lot of high end options, that this team has put so much time and energy into remaking the receiving core and giving them a fighting chance at having a decent depth chart so that this is a watchable football team this year. So, yeah. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, I like the trade. You know, it's a fifth round pick, and I know people were like, oh, well, Grady Jarrett was a fifth round pick, so we just gave up a chance to draft the next Grady Jarrett. And like, there's maybe like one Grady Jarrett in every fifth round. Like, the vast, like, I would say far less than half of fifth round picks turn into starters. You know, maybe half turn into rosterable players long term, that sort of thing. But it's a fifth round pick is a crapshoot, and I think Edwards, like, I think at worst is probably a number four wide receiver, and I think he's shown that he can definitely be a number three. And obviously you're hoping that maybe he can be more than that. You know, we'll see. I think his last year with the Raiders was promising enough that I really don't understand why they would trade him away for so little, considering they spent a third on him, and he was basically their number two receiver, obviously their third or fourth target in the passing game, because they have Darren Waller too at tight end. It's a weird one. I guess maybe it's Josh McDaniels, the Patriots way, you know, just like, he's not my guy, get him out of here, that sort of thing. You know, Josh McDaniels probably going to ruin another team. So, you know, whatever, you know, but it's the Falcons benefit. I like it. I think that it's promising, and it's definitely a nice addition because Drake London's nice, but you don't really want to rely on him to just have to hit the ground running immediately. And with the Bryan Edwards addition, it's sort of like maybe you can lean a little bit more on Edwards. And you've got now, I think, like, every addition that we've seen, like, we've got Drake London. It's like, okay, that was like desperately needed. And then it's like, okay, now we have Bryan Edwards. It's like, okay, and now it's like Auden Tate, Damir Bird, Alamide Zaccheaus, Kaderil Hodge, and all this. It's like, oh, well, now we're starting to get to the point where, you know, some of these guys might not even make the roster. And who before it was like, oh, well, Kaderil Hodge is like our number three wide receiver. So we've come a long way. I still don't think they're like a top 10 receiving group, you know, maybe in a few years if like Bryan Edwards really pans out and Drake London's as good as obviously you hope he is drafting him in the top 10. Then maybe we look at this group in a couple years and we're like, oh yeah, this is actually really good. But for only a fifth round pick, a guy that's going to be on a cheap rookie contract for the next two seasons, I love it. And that does open up a good opportunity to talk about the receiving depth chart real quick, because I did think you had an interesting take, Aaron, in saying that you didn't think Auden Tate's roster spot was maybe safe, thinking that the team might prioritize Damir Bird. So I'm happy to be in the presence of another Damir Bird truther. I mean, well, I like Bird. I don't know why people think he's like terrible or something. So
yeah, like, you know, and I guess now I've outed myself as a Damir Bird fan, even though he's fine. Like, he's a perfectly fine wide. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pound the table like this Damir Bird is a special player. And like,
elite
just,
player.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was controversial, you know, with me sort of giving my sort of preliminary projection on what I think the depth chart is probably going to be going into training camp. Obviously we're going to see some competition and certainly things are going to change, but ultimately the conclusion I reach, and this is why I'll continue to be branded as the special teams matters guys, is I think special teams does way more to decide roster battles than I think your average fan realizes. And ultimately the issue, when you look at this wide receiver, like, we know Drake London's going to be their number one guy. He's not going to play on special teams. Yep. And Bryan Edwards, Auden Tate, and then Geronimo Allison. And this was kind of what prompted it for me to come out and say that, because, you know, people got really, you know, hyped. Oh, we added Geronimo Allison on Monday after rookie minicamp. And I just kind of, like, all three of those guys, Bryan Edwards, Auden Tate, and Geronimo Allison, didn't really play special teams. That was part of the reason why Auden Tate didn't barely played in Cincinnati, because like if he doesn't play special teams, there's no reason to activate him on game days because you have AJ Green and T Higgins and Jamar Chase. And like, what is he doing for your team? And Bryan Edwards obviously had an opportunity to play it with the Raiders. And so he didn't necessarily have to play on special teams. And Geronimo Allison was a decent sort of slot receiver for the Packers and didn't necessarily have to play on special teams. And ultimately what people don't realize with, and Kevin, you've talked about this on here, where like Arthur Smith loves his two tight end sets, right? Like the Falcons, you know, I'm sure you know off the top of your head, like the Falcons were either like one or two in terms of
second, I believe, in 12. Yeah.
In terms of like how often they use 12 personnel, the two tight end sets, and how often they didn't use 11 personnel, which is three wide receiver sets. So in reality, you know, assuming everybody's healthy, Arthur Smith only needs three wide receivers in his offense. And we saw that play out last year, you know, where it's basically the only guys that played, particularly after Ridley left, were Russell Gage, Tajay Sharpe, and Olamide Zaccheaus. Christian Blake, I think, played like 50 snaps, and he was the fourth wide receiver last year. And so, like, figuring out who those three guys are going to be, I think we can comfortably say Drake London will be one of them. I think we all kind of think Bryan Edwards will be somewhere in it, whether he's two or three ultimately doesn't really matter. And then the question is going to be, who's that third guy? And I think, as I kind of talked about before, where it's like, sure, London, you know, a trio of London, Edwards, and Tate all bring a lot of size, but like, I think
you've already got Pitts and another tight end. Like, how much size is like necessary?
Yeah, like you kind of need somebody that can, you know, the one knocks on all those guys, whether you think it's fair or not, is can they separate, right? Like, and so you kind of need a guy that can do the separation, can do all the sort of quick in and out stuff. And to me, that's going to either be Damir Bird or Olamide Zaccheaus. And so the reason why I had Bird sort of ahead of Zaccheaus in that mix, it could you could flip a coin and take, I think they're both bringing similar skill sets. But to me, what was notable about Damir Bird was that the Falcons guaranteed a portion of his contract, like roughly like $400K of his salary is guaranteed this year. So it doesn't make it impossible to cut him, but it makes it where it doesn't really benefit them to cut him. They guaranteed $0 on Auden Tate's contract. They guaranteed $0 on Kadero Hodges' contract. And so, like, to me, the fact that Damir Bird was one of the few, was the only wide receiver that they guaranteed. And frankly, outside of, like, Jermaine Ifedi and Elijah Wilkinson and obviously, like, guys like Rashawn Evans, they didn't really do a whole lot guaranteeing money for a lot of guys. And so that, to me, kind of tells me that the Falcons have a higher opinion of Damir Bird than probably your average Falcon fan does. And, you know, we could probably owe that to our GM, Ryan Pace. And I think that kind of led me to believe that, you know, Bird probably is going into camp probably a little higher on the depth chart than I think most people realize. And then I think the other controversial thing I put in there was having Kadero Hodge as the fifth guy. But like, when you understand, like, the fifth guy last year was Frank Darby, and basically all, as every Falcon fan knows, Frank Darby never saw the field on offense, and all he did was play special teams. And that's kind of what that role is for, is to basically be the guy on game day to play on special teams at the wide receiver position. That's a gunner in this Falcons team. That's what Frank Darby was for most of last season. But the interesting thing about Kadero Hodge was that he was a really good gunner for the Browns a couple of years ago. And I think the Falcons essentially signed him to basically be the gunner across from Avery Williams, potentially this year. You know, Olamide Zaccheaus could also have that role. That's what he started out the season as, the gunner. It was him and Cordero Patterson as the two gunners on the punt coverage team last year before injuries, you know, prompted the Falcons to need him more on offense. And obviously Patterson was needed more on offense. And so it became Frank Darby. It became, I think, Kendall Sheffield. And then, you know, Avery Williams kind of reemerged at the end of the season and made a couple of plays there. But, you know, I just look at it, and I think special teams is going to wind up deciding some of these roster battles. And because Auden Tate has zero guaranteed money, has very little to no experience playing special teams, I do think this Bryan Edwards move is basically an indication that, you know, the Falcons are looking in another direction to fill those top spots on the depth chart. So that's a long-winded way to explain my crazy five-man wide receiver.
Ridiculous take. You know.
I think one thing could still make the team. I certainly think the Falcons will probably try to keep six wide receivers on the roster, but that sixth guy, presumably Auden Tate, maybe Geronimo Allison, maybe one of these undrafted free agents or whatever the case may be, is probably, like we saw Frank Darby be early in the season, not going to be active on game days because he's not really contributing a whole lot in that regard. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I like about how they've assembled the wide receiver group, and we're going to get Dave's thoughts here in just a second. Dave, I don't want Dave to fall asleep over there, but I do think like they've brought in guys to fill certain roles. And I think they have some options to match up. Like if we're playing a team, say their number one corner's out and the rest of their secondary is all, 5'11 or shorter. It's like, okay, well maybe we are going to play this like statuesque, receiving core now and just, Mariota or Ritter's just going to throw the ball 7 feet off the ground. And it's like, okay, they can't do anything about that. And that's fine. That's not going to work against every secondary, but for some that might work. But I think a lot of people don't realize like the fifth and sixth wide receiver spots, if they're going to be active, they have to play special teams. And the fourth receiver honestly has to play special teams too. So, that the guy that's active of the fifth and sixth receivers, whether you think, maybe Auden Tate is the fifth receiver, quote unquote, in terms of like receiving talent. And like, if they had to, like if somebody gets hurt at the top, he's probably more likely to take over a receiving role. But the guy that's going to be active is the guy that's going to be playing on special teams more. And, Tate hasn't really done it. Maybe he can, the lack of long speed would seem to hurt him there a little bit as a gunner, as a special teams player. But, I do think they've assembled, I think Bird really brings the element of speed that they lost when Calvin Ridley was suspended. I know a lot of people are like, oh, the Falcons need to add a speedster. They need to add a speedster. Guys, Damir Bird is the speedster. He ran like a 4.27. Okay. This guy is fast. Okay. He's fast. Like they have a speed guy. They have Kyle Pitts. Okay. Remember him. He's also really fast. Like they don't need another speed guy. They have some speed guys, Zaccheaus sort of can operate there as well. And then they have some size guys, Auden Tate, Drake London, and Bryan Edwards, and they can sort of mix and match, but you sort of feel like Bryan Edwards will sometimes play directly across from London. Sometimes maybe if they do go to three receivers, maybe they move London into the slot, and then in those situations, maybe you could see, Bryan Edwards and Auden Tate playing at the same time alongside Drake London, but like, I don't know how many snaps they're going to play of that. I do think that if there's an injury to like Edwards or Drake London, that Auden Tate would be like the backup for those two players in terms of the role. So I do think like Auden Tate is probably a favorite to make the roster. I mean, I do still believe that, but I don't disagree that like if both Bryan Edwards and Drake London are healthy, that Auden Tate could be a game day inactive. And I don't think people should be shocked by that because Kadarrelle Hodge might be the sixth receiver on the depth chart in terms of receiving, but he's going to play more special teams. So he's the one they need active on game days. Because they want probably two backup Z guys too. Like they probably want Bird and Zaccheaus as the sort of flanker guys. If they want speed, and then they've got Edwards and London as sort of the X guys. And maybe you could play two of those guys at the same time. People are going to rotate all that stuff. But, I think people need to look at it, the whole picture, not just who's the best receiver, because those bottom of the depth chart guys have to play teams. And Dave, finally, we will get your thoughts on the wide receiver depth chart. What do you think about that whole situation?
I took a little nap there, but
yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, got some Elden Ring in. Yeah,
no. I agree. I think it's counterintuitive. I think only because people got a little bit hyped up for Tate when he was like the most exciting thing that had happened to this wide receiver depth chart. Like, oh, it's a big guy with some potential. But now they've added another big guy with more potential. And I think it's probably fair to say, yeah, maybe he hangs on because I think they like him. But I think if you shake it out, it makes perfect sense that you would, keep Lamide around because he offers value in several different ways. I think Bird is a virtual lock, and I think Hodge is a virtual lock for a special teams value. Marquise Williams isn't going out there and saying, well, whatever you give me, it's fine. Nor should he. So it really just depends on how many guys you're carrying. But I do think that, there's always that potential that Tate does not, in fact, make the roster at the end of the day, and that some of the guys that we were looking at as, maybe he sneaks on as the fifth or sixth receiver back when we had eight guys, and you know, most of them had their limbs, you know, versus now it's yeah, it just makes sense to say, you know, if they do go one through five, that's the group you're looking at, is sort of London, Edwards, Bird, Lamide, and Hodge. So
yeah, I think that makes sense. And like, I think people are getting a little too hyped about Geronimo Allison also. Like, this was a guy they did not even bring in as like a futures guy or like a cheap sign. This was like, you need to come to rookie minicamp to prove that we need to give you a roster. And then he earned a spot. But like, you know,
maybe practice squad. Like, maybe. That's the thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
You'll want some redundancy, and like, they are not allergic to veteran guys on the practice squad.
Yeah.
I think they showed that a year ago. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would be perfect. I think that'd be great for him. Yeah, and the other, go ahead. Yeah,
I was going to say, the one thing that before you, I would pump the brakes on the Geronimo Allison hype is he played on the Lions last year. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm sure there are Falcon fans that might disagree with this, but I think the Lions had a worse wide receiver core than the Falcons did last year, and he couldn't get on the field. So, like, again, Geronimo Allison is a perfectly solid NFL player, but I think if you're expecting him to, you know, come in here and tear it up this summer, maybe he does, you know, who knows?
Maybe. But, like, that'd be great. But
I wouldn't get too hyped on a guy that could barely crack the lineup on a worse wide receiver core a year ago, cracking the lineup on a getting there. Like, we're getting
maybe
there
approaching
the
average. Average.
We're
now.
getting there. So, yeah, you know, I think we're probably in a better spot today than the Lions were a year ago.
Yeah.
So,
and maybe the Falcons
necessarily
bode
well for him. Yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, I agree with all that.
Explain why Tim Boyle was so good then.
Tim Boyle to God. Okay, like, put some respect on that man's name.
Man,
right,
Amon Ross St. Brown did some great things.
He will never get
enough credit for carrying that Lions passing game all year.
Literally, my dynasty team made it to the championship with Amon St. Brown. Like, that dude
I liked him a lot, and I drafted him in a couple leagues last year. But yeah, that is, you know, that you got to put that in context. It was a heroic effort for sure.
Yes, that was that man. He deserves it. It's sort of like Kyle Pitts last year on the Falcons receiving core. It was like Kyle Pitts getting triple teamed every play, and it's sort of what Amon had to go through. But I definitely like the direction we're heading at wide receiver compared to how it was for much of the offseason. It's a lot more rosy now. Before we get to Nick Kwiatkowski, who is the other addition this weekend, guys, want to remind you to like and subscribe. Really appreciate that. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Corey Carter, Kieran, Robert Kelly, Dwight, everybody. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us tonight. Like I said, like and subscribe. If you guys got any burning questions, feel free to throw those in the chat. We'll try to get some if we can. If you absolutely have to have your question answered, you can follow the tip link in the show description. I believe it's streamlabs.com/Falcoholic or Falcoholic Live or something like that. It'll pop up on screen. It's also in the show description. We really appreciate that, guys. Thank you. So, Nick Kwiatkowski comes in, veteran linebacker, sort of opens the Pandora's box once again of what's going to happen with Deion Jones. Dave, your thoughts on this situation?
I got to start by saying somebody responded to me when they signed him with, "Isn't that the guy from Monsters, Inc.?" And it ruined everything
Nick
for me.
Wazowski.
Nick Kwiatkowski. So it's a problem for me. But getting past that, you know, good signing. I think another solid veteran signing. And I think it is perfectly legitimate to ask that question. You know, back at the beginning of the offseason, I said that I thought Deion Jones would be the guy kind of out of everybody who stuck around. And for a while that looked like it was true. But, you know, I think it's telling that they've signed Evans, you know, they drafted Anderson, they have Walker, and now they've signed Kwiatkowski. And, you know, again, I almost did it. But
Wazowski.
You don't do all those things, you know, unless you're anticipating potentially moving Deion Jones, which to me, you know, Arthur Smith not really bringing him up ever when he's commenting.
Yeah, he goes out of his way not to. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he does. He's like Dorian Etheridge. There's nobody else I'm forgetting, really, you know. And so you look at all those factors and you have to think they're at least trying to move him and giving themselves options, because Kwiatkowski, Walker, and Evans can all start, I think. You know, not all of them are going to be great players, but certainly you give yourself three credible starters and you don't have to rush Anderson. And to me, when you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, it does look like they're trying to move Jones, and we ought to know in a couple of weeks. So
Yeah, exactly. It certainly seems that the wind is blowing in a certain direction. We're not going to have to wait too much longer to find out. But I think it's always sort of been they needed to find a dance partner for Deion Jones. But if they did find one, they would basically take anything, I think. But, you know, if they could get like a fifth, I'd be pretty happy. You know, anything more than that would be great. But it's probably going to be less than that. But we'll see. Yeah. Aaron, what do you think about Nick Kwiatkowski coming in and sort of what that might mean for Deion Jones?
Yeah, I'm a fan of him. I remember when he was coming up in that 2016 draft class with Deion Jones and all those guys, he was certainly on my radar. I think he was certainly on the Falcons' radar at that point in time. Check their sort of athleticism boxes. And so, you know, obviously the Falcons went with Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell there. But if they hadn't gotten that linebacker early, he was a guy that I think could have potentially in an alternate universe been a Falcon from the get-go. So I like him as a player. I think he's going to bring you know, some value to the Falcons. I'm with you guys. Like either Arthur Smith is not mentioning Deion Jones because it's ridiculous to even question his status with the team. And so he doesn't even deserve to be conversated because, oh, of course, everybody knows Deion Jones is great and he's going to be a Falcon. Or yeah, I think it's probably the latter, which is this is indicating that the Falcons are prepared to move on. Cause it goes back to the conversation we just had with the wide receiver. When you think about roster construction, the Falcons, you know, regularly had about 5 off-ball linebackers active on game day last year. And, you know, that was Deion Jones, Foye Oluokun, Michael Walker, Darren Bates, and then occasionally Dorian Etheridge, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And those last couple of spots are just basically special teams role. And you imagine, you know, Walker's proven himself on special teams. Troy Anderson, you expect him to play a lot of special teams this year. And Kwiatkowski, to his credit, has spent considerable time playing special teams with the Bears and with the Raiders last year. So he can give you valuable contributions there. But if you're looking for a fifth linebacker just to play special teams, like yeah. You feel like between Dorian Etheridge, between Nate Landman, the undrafted free agent, you kind of have those bases covered. So why are you bringing in Kwiatkowski just to be a depth piece? So, you know, as you guys have said, reading between the lines, you're just kind of like, someone's on the way out. One of these top four guys, you know, and it's like, I don't think it's going to be Rashawn Evans. I don't think it's going to be Troy Anderson, and I don't see any reason why it would be Michael Walker. So it's like, who's the guy that's left, you know? Yeah. And so you just kind of, it does seem to indicate that Deion Jones is on the way out. I've been skeptical this entire time, or at least, you know, since March 21st, whenever Deion Jones got that roster bonus, that the Falcons would be able to move on from him. Cause I've been under the impression that the Falcons have been quietly shopping Deion Jones since March of last year, and they haven't gotten any takers on him, and that's why he hasn't been traded. If they would have gotten, you know, takers on him, but you do sort of wonder, and so that kind of makes me a little skeptical still that they're going to ultimately move on from him come June 1st. But like at the same time, you're seeing all these context clues that are telling you that somebody's going to get moved on from, or the Falcons, or just or Ryan Pace just basically really was able to break into Terry's office and be like, you got to get my guy. Like I'm quitting tomorrow if you don't get my guy. And you know, Terry can't do nothing without Ryan Pace calling the shots. In the agency. So, you know, he had to acquiesce to get Kwiatkowski. But at the same time, this was something I talked about on Locked On Falcons the other day, which is like Kwiatkowski had options, you know, the Raiders, he was going to visit the Raiders. I think it was a visit an undisclosed third team, but the Falcons were the second team he visited, and they offered, you know, they had to offer him something. We don't know. I don't know the details of the contract yet, but I imagine they offered him a path to starting. And I think you only have that path to starting if Deion Jones is on the way out. So again, a lot of smoke here suggesting that a Deion Jones trade is imminent in the next couple of weeks or months.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought they would, if they were going to move Deion, it was probably going to happen, you know, the first week of the year before his roster bonus kicked in. But, you know, it seems like they couldn't make it work. The fact that the Falcons are going to have to absorb that roster bonus maybe makes the trade a little bit easier to swallow for the other team.
I mean to interrupt you, Kevin, but I think they were kind of busy with the whole Deshaun Watson stuff during that week. You know?
Maybe. Kinda, something else might have been going on.
Yeah, they might have been, forgot, like, oh, this roster bonus. Ah, we missed that. Oh, dang.
Yeah. Well, they were still trying to compete right away. You know, this is a win now team. So, but no, I just, it just really seems like the wind is blowing strongly in one direction. And who knows if it will actually materialize. If it doesn't, they're just like, we're going to have the deepest linebacker group in the NFL. Like, it maybe won't be the best, but it'll be the deepest. Like, any one of these five guys is a starter. And we're just going to stockpile these starting linebackers. But like you said, like Nate Landman, you mentioned, like, that's a guy who's probably going to compete for a roster spot too. Not the most athletic guy, but like certainly someone who's rosterable. Dorian Etheridge was a fine fifth linebacker last year. He was really good in the preseason. You know, maybe they think there's still something there. So there just doesn't seem to be much of a reason to sign another linebacker if no one's on the way out. And like you said, they're not moving on from Rashawn Evans, who they literally just signed. They're not moving on from Troy Anderson, who they just drafted in the second round, unless somebody's coming with a great offer for Michael Walker, which, you know, they don't need to wait to make that trade. Like, they could just make the trade for Michael Walker if someone was coming in here offering, you know, premium compensation for him. So the only one that makes sense to move on from is Deion Jones. So they save a lot of money. It seems to make sense. We'll see if it actually occurs. You know, there's certainly teams out there that could use a linebacker. I know the Jets have been floated a lot. Some people mentioned the Cowboys too. But now that the Falcons have to eat that roster bonus, the team trading for Deion it's not going to be as expensive. So that might be the key to getting it done, is that it's, you know, whatever, $3 million cheaper, whatever it was, for the team trading for him now after June 1st. So, that seems to be the tea leaves. We'll see if it actually happens. We got a couple more weeks to wait till we find out, but, that'd be a lot of money coming the Falcons way if they're able to get it done. You know, who knows if they'll actually spend it or if they'll just keep it and roll it over to next year, but it is something to consider. Yeah, guys, before we move on any further, Dave, is there anything else you wanted to add there? Sorry. I think we got Dave's take, but yeah.
You did. I'd say the only thing I'd add here is I think it's pretty telling at this point. Like, we're learning a little bit about this team's preferences, like the number of Senior Bowl players they're taking tells you should probably pay attention to who's on the Senior Bowl rosters. And I think another thing is, you know, if that Deion Jones trade gets made, I think the fact that Arthur Smith kind of refused to talk about him for 3 months straight is probably a good indicator and something we should watch in the future. If all of a sudden he's not mentioning somebody's name in a position group, we should probably keep an eye on that.
Yeah, next presser, I will have a list of players. My Arthur Smith, what about this guy?
And then if he doesn't acknowledge him, then we know. Yeah. That's his tell.
Yeah. How do you feel about the seventh cornerback on this list?
Yeah. No, he's like, no, I'm not cutting that guy. I just don't know who that is. You ask Terry about that. He's the one that signed that guy. Yeah. Oh, it's actually Ryan Pace. Ask Ryan Pace about it. Yeah. Got to get every look, guys. Nick Kwiatkowski hasn't been a Bear for like two or three seasons. Okay. So he's like a removed Bear. He was with the Raiders the last 2 years. Okay. So, you know, he's not just another Bear.
Of a Bear. Ryan he's Pace got wants the spirit. That's of all a bear. That matters. It's the soul of the Bear.
Yep. He was terrific that last year in Chicago too. Like, I think if you want to sort of look at Kwiatkowski and be like, you know, what is this guy? Like, he can be an above average starting linebacker. If it all works out for him, he's been good in coverage. I mean, I like the signing. I think he's someone that absolutely could be a starter, or at least in a starting trio with like Rashawn Evans and Michael Walker. And, you know, Trey Anderson's going to factor in too. We'll see how quickly he gets acclimated. But and like Aaron pointed out, he plays special teams too. So really, he's just no matter where he ends up. But I agree with what Aaron said. Like, he's not coming here over somewhere else if he's got a chance to start somewhere else. And the Falcons, I think, probably were like, yeah, you're going to be one of the starting two linebackers, more than likely, assuming you show out in camp, you know, come work hard, you know, prove yourself. But, you know, you've got a really good chance to be a starting linebacker here. And like the Raiders, he was probably going to be like at best their third guy once again. So I like the signing. I think it'll be a good one. And I think it probably does portend the end to Deion Jones' tenure in Atlanta. But wanted to make sure before we move on to get to Corey Carter's $62 donation. Corey, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate that. He says, this donation is in the name of my uncle, Greg Stevenson, who will be taken off life support on Friday due to pulmonary fibrosis. He was the nicest guy ever and a great athlete, especially when it came to pool, golf, and baseball. Love and miss you, Corey. Sorry for your loss, man. Really appreciate the donation. Our thoughts are with you, buddy. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. Really appreciate the donation. And we hope for the best for your uncle, for your family, and really appreciate you. So thanks for that, man. Yeah, moving on to the next topic. We will get to some rookie mini camp takes. Obviously, there's not a ton there. I was, you know, I don't live in Atlanta, so I wasn't there. We've been sort of, you know, reading the tea leaves there. The big takeaway seems to be that Desmond Ridder looked good, which it's been a while since we've had a rookie quarterback in Atlanta, you know, impressing in any capacity. You know, Felipe Franks, you know, maybe wasn't the most impressive training camp quarterback. So Drake London looked good too, as you expect for a first rounder. But yeah, Aaron, anything interesting that you saw or heard from minicamp? Because I don't believe you were there either. But anything interesting that you picked up from the reporting on minicamp this last weekend?
Yeah, I wasn't there. I had made little to no effort to be there.
I really tried hard, but guys, I just couldn't pull through. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think Arthur Smith kind of said it. It's more rookie orientation than anything that you can kind of glean. It's trying to get these guys acclimated to the system and learning the system and sort of how they do things than necessarily like, oh, jobs are going to be won and lost in rookie minicamp. But, you know, my main takeaway was, you know, Desmond Ridder seemingly from afar checked all the boxes that you wanted to see him check coming into camp. You know, again, I don't think it's fair to quite put these same expectations on Desmond Ridder, but, you know, that was one of the things that Matt Ryan did coming into camp. His first minicamp looked really good all throughout May and June. All you heard was this guy's a professional. His approach to the game is great. You know, he's ready to go, all these various things. You're seeing the same things about Desmond Ridder when we're talking about, you know, what overlaps in terms of his abilities, his skill set with Matt Ryan. It's really that kind of character, leadership, work ethic, all those sort of intangible qualities that you look for in a franchise quarterback. So it's good to hear him sort of deliver on that sort of promise. So if you're a Falcon fan, and I'm the negative Nancy, I'm the pessimist of Falcons Twitter and whatnot. But, you know, if you want to buy into Desmond Ridder sort of having those Matt Ryan-esque intangibles to turn around this franchise and all these various things, then, you know, he did all the things that you wanted to see him do and hear him do in this rookie mini camp to buy into that narrative. Whether, you know, I think you should have those hopes going into this season, going into the summer, you know, it's a different conversation, but I think he checked all the boxes that you wanted to see and checked. And so that's a step in the right direction. And who knows, 6 months from now, we could be, you know, looking at Desmond Ridder as the, you know, the week one starter and leading this team into a playoff race. Yeah, as improbable as that seems to me saying today, it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, I think there is a path for Desmond Ridder to be the week one starter. I think it's a very narrow path, beset with treachery at all sides, and, you know, it's winding through the mountains, and it's very difficult, you know, sort of like God of War. If anybody's played that game, you know, you got to sort of navigate this very, there's a lot of enemies, you know, there's a lot of boss fights involved, but, you know, the path is possible. He could navigate it, and this was the first step, and I think he did a good job at the first step. You know, this is the first step on his path, but the fact that he's able to come in, take command, look sharp early on, it's rookie minicamp, guys, like, you know, it is what it is, but that's still impressive, and it's the right way to start if you're hoping for Ridder to have sort of a miraculous high-end rookie season or even just be a high-end rookie backup to Marcus Mariota, because it's not always that you see these rookies hit the ground running in minicamp. It's not always that you see them hit the ground running at all in their rookie season. And I think that it's good to see Ridder do a good job. Dave, did you have any takeaways from minicamp, including what we've been talking about with Ridder or anybody else?
I loved hearing that Caleb Huntley is still alive. He's still working. My guy, Caleb Huntley, who I thought was going to make the roster last year.
Yep.
So that's a big take for me. But otherwise, yeah, it is all about Ridder. Because, you know, I sort of argued in the run-up to the draft and post-Matt Ryan trade that, like, nailing the quarterback position is a very big deal. And if you found your guy in the third round, you look like a genius. And if not, well, we're dipping into the first round well probably next year. And if not, somebody might be out of a job in 2024. So it's kind of a big deal if Ridder is a hit. And so just seeing that he's coming in with confidence and looking good early, as meaningless as it might be, is good news. So that's my takeaway.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, I want Ritter to be good. You know, I was sort of pounding the Ritter drum all offseason. You know, I was also pounding the Malik Willis drum. So I had my bases covered in terms of quarterbacks they might have drafted. But, you know, like I acknowledged that I was pounding the drum for those two. So I was like, 50-50 chance. Yeah, I wasn't really pounding the Bailey Zappe drum. So I would have missed if that were the case. But, you know, I wasn't really pounding the Sam Howell or Matt Corral drum. It seems like the Panthers fans have really taken off on the Matt Corral hype train, like absurdly far. They're like, no, we shouldn't even consider Bryce Young next year because Matt Corral's a better prospect. So, you know, shout out to Panthers fans for it's been so long since I've seen a good quarterback. You know, it's like water in the desert. You know, it's like, oh, Matt Corral, he's the first guy we've seen that has any sort of promise in forever. So, you know, let's just he's definitely the next franchise guy. But all that notwithstanding, you know, I do like what we've seen from Desmond Ridder so far. I think he's the type of guy that probably has a better chance than a lot of rookies to hit the ground running because he did play in a pro style offense. He's used to running through those progressions. He's someone that's known for his work ethic. He's spent a lot of time with Jordan Palmer, the quarterback guru, I think each of the last three off seasons, sort of getting his feet wet with NFL stuff. So I think of his rookie season could potentially be better. The thing with Ritter is he just needs to clean up his accuracy. He needs to get acclimated to the system. He needs to get on the same page with these Falcons receivers. And it's sort of on him and the coaching staff to see how quickly that can happen. We really don't know how quickly that'll be. I really doubt it'll be week one. I mean, I think that's pretty tough to ask. Like, it's not like he's beating out a total schmo. Like, it's Mariota's not a bad quarterback. He's very experienced. He's played in this offense before. Mariota's a fine quarterback. His sort of issue is that he's just not been able to stay healthy and hasn't necessarily had the ceiling that you would want from a guy who's picked number two overall, obviously. But it's not a pushover. This isn't like they brought in a patsy for Ritter to just beat up on in training camp. But I think Ritter has a very, you know, good mindset for it, a very aggressive, like, I'm going to be the starting quarterback. And honestly, like, the NFL is brutal. You have to have that mindset if you want to have a chance. Like, you have to go into it like, I'm the best quarterback that ever played the game. I'm the best there is. I'm going to beat a veteran. I don't care. Like, you probably still won't, and you're probably none of those things. But if you don't believe it, then there's absolutely no chance you ever could do it. So, like, if you don't believe in yourself, like, it's never going to happen. So I applaud Ritter's tenacity there, and he's used to having to play in difficult situations. You know, he did redshirt his first year at Cincinnati, but he took over immediately after that. And you know, I think he was like the AAC rookie of the year. And then he, you know, was the conference player of the year the next 2 years. So this is a guy that is capable of quickly assuming that leadership role. But, you know, pump the brakes a little bit is all I'm saying. Like, let's not base it on rookie minicamp. If he's like in the preseason outplaying Marcus Mariota and getting reps with the ones, then I think it's like, okay, we need to really discuss if this guy's going to be the week one starter. But we can still discuss it. I'm just saying, you know, let's just relax. Like, it's rookie minicamp. That's all. So,
well, we're not thankfully Panthers fans about this, but the other thing here is that I'm getting a lot of questions like, who's to say that Mariota can't be a long-term high-end starter? And I'm like, guys, come on, man. We can't do this.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things. Like, if it happens, just let it happen and enjoy being so shocked by it. Like Cordarrelle Patterson last year, like, enjoy the surprise, you know, enjoy being happy that something went really well. Don't just like speak it into existence like, oh yeah, Mariota's going to be the next franchise quarterback in Atlanta. Like, no, that's not reasonable to say. Like, maybe it will happen. I hope it does. You know, like, that would be great. You know, he's not like an old quarterback or anything. If he does happen to just take off and have a career renaissance and all this, like, the Falcons could easily have him for a decade. So it's like, that could be great. But the most likely scenario is Mariota's fine, but he's not someone you're going to want to tie yourself to long term. And we'll just have to see what happens with Ritter. But other than that, you know, other takeaways, I think that, you know, Drake London was impressive, obviously. I did like to hear the Caleb Huntley hype, because I think, you know, I still don't know if he's got a clear path to the roster. He's going to have to beat Quadri Olison, who he didn't beat last year, but, he certainly seems to be that sort of fit and maybe another favorite for the practice squad, because they didn't really bring in anybody else. Like, it's basically Patterson, Damian Williams, Tyler Allgeier, Quadri Olison, and Caleb Huntley. And, like, that's pretty much it. Like, they didn't really bring in any other competition. So it's like Caleb Huntley's just walking into a practice squad spot if they go with four running backs again. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see there. But it was rookie minicamp. It's exciting to see these guys on the field. It's nice to have some more pictures in the editor, you know, to draw from. You know, I appreciate that. So that's underrated aspect of these on-field activities.
You can only put the Falcons helmet in there so many times in
exactly.
a row.
Exactly. Yeah, so it just that helps a lot. It get actual pictures of some of these guys in Falcons colors of some sort. So appreciate that for sure. Yeah, guys, anything else on rookie minicamp before we change gears here?
Nothing here.
All right. We're good to go. All right. Well, again, guys, appreciate everyone for tuning in tonight. Like I said, like and subscribe. If you have any burning questions, you can donate at the link there at streamlabs.com/falcoholic. Also, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/falcoholiclive. If you're interested in supporting the show, getting access to some exclusive perks, including ad-free, high-quality versions of all the audio recordings of this and the podcast. So if you hate ads, that's a great way to get around those ads. So, appreciate everyone, all of you 24, 25 people now, I believe it is, on Patreon. We really appreciate you guys. And we'll have Q&A info coming out soon. There's going to be another Q&A session here imminently. So keep an eye out for that, guys. Let's move on to some schedule release talk. That's what everyone showed up for tonight, right, is to talk about, you know, this Falcons schedule where they're definitely going to win a lot of games. Am I right? Am I right, everyone? Yeah, I mean, it's a brutal schedule. It's really tough. Let's be honest here. I mean, we knew the teams they were playing were tough. I do think there's to start the season, it's pretty rough. I think like the first, what is it? Like six games they have to play Rams, Bucks, 49ers, and Bengals. And it's just like, oof. Like, you're going to have a really tough time winning any of those games for sure. They do open against the Saints, which I think is pretty fun. That's always a fun game. You know, I don't know that. I do think the Falcons have a good chance of beating the Saints. I don't know if it'll be week one, though, because, again, this is a new quarterback coming in and like a new, you know, like it's this team might take some time to really get itself together on offense with the new quarterbacks coming in. So maybe I think it's more likely to be that they might lose that week one matchup and then upset the Saints at home, which I think, let's be honest, that's always fun to go into their house like late in the season and just upset them and screw up their playoff hopes. So that can be fun too. Obviously, I wouldn't be opposed to the sweep either, so we should leave the door open on that. But I think late in the season it opens up a little bit. You know, the Cardinals, I know a lot of people are afraid of them, but they always suck and late in the season. Like, they completely fall off a cliff after midseason. So that one might be a game that's easier than some people expect. But yeah, what were anything interesting on the schedule? Dave, I'll go to you first. Any interesting stretches, any games that you're looking forward to on this schedule?
Just starting the season with the Saints is terrifying, but great. Just winning that game, the rest
just get
of the
to 1-0. Yeah,
it's kind of gravy, you know. Yeah. Like at that point, given my expectations for the year, but really that first 7-game stretch is everything, right? If they come out of that, even 3-4, just showing that they can be a competitive football team, that they're beating some good teams, you'll have some hope for later in the year. And if they get absolutely creamed, and they're 2-5 or worse, by the time we make it through that 7-game stretch, well, we're just kind of watching to see what Drake London and Kyle Pitts do and when we get Desmond Ridder. So I think, to me, that's the big stretch of the season right there, is just seeing what this team is made of early on and whether they are better than we think they are or not. And I think probably not, but it would be nice to be surprised, and hopefully at the very least they can start things off right. Instead of getting annihilated by Philadelphia, they can beat New Orleans, and then, you know, the next few games as they're getting rolled over potentially by the Rams and the Bengals and so forth, we can be like, but they beat the Saints, so that was pretty great, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, it'll be, I want to get Aaron's take too, but like there's a chance, like if they upset the Saints, like they could possibly beat the Seahawks and the Browns. It's like maybe they could get to a winning record, you know, early on, you know, especially if Deshaun Watson's suspended. You know, maybe there's a path for them to get to like 3-1, and it would be like the biggest mirage. It would be like the Panthers last year, just this huge mirage, like of like, oh, the Falcons maybe are good, and then they're gonna get like creamed over the next like three games, and it'll be like 3-4. But I do think there's a chance that something like that could happen, and that's like the rosiest possible interpretation of things. But Aaron, what do you think about that opening schedule and anything else that you want to touch on there?
Yeah, look, you know, there's a non-zero chance that the Falcons can, you know, get off to a good start this year and start like 3-1 or 3-4 or whatever the case may be. It's not impossible. You know, I wouldn't at this point in time, unless we can see really a strong showing for this team in the preseason. And, you know, Arthur Smith has already promised us that we'll actually get to see these guys in the preseason. So there's hope.
Man, that joke. Oh, man, that joke is that, man, I love that bit, but I guess he wants to end that bit. So,
I'm excited about that. I kind of went into this even before we drafted Desmond Ridder, being like, okay, we're going to draft a quarterback at some point. Marcus Mariota is going to start the season. He'll play like 6-ish games or whatever, start 6 to 8 games. And the team will stink. and then they'll turn the keys to that young quarterback and we'll have an opportunity to see what he can do. Hopefully, once he's get acclimated to the season. And I think the schedule makers basically, I don't know, were like reading my mind. And I think they constructed basically the perfect schedule for that to happen with that tough 7-game stretch. And then you get kind of relatively soft opponents starting in week 8 with Carolina. You know, the Chargers not going to be soft or anything like that, but you know, Chargers going to Chargers, so you never know.
Yeah, they could blow it.
Then you get the Panthers on Thursday night, you get the Bears, you get Washington, you get Pittsburgh. And like, when you look at their schedule, when you look at the opponents, like probably the 5 most winnable games are the 2 against Carolina, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and probably Seattle. But then Washington will probably be the 6th most winnable game on their schedule. And they got like 5 of those 6 games in that stretch from week 8 to week 13. And it just seems perfect. They're like, okay, we'll throw Marcus Mariota to the Wolves. He'll get torn apart by the Wolves. The Wolves will get full. And then, you know, we'll let Desmond Ridder go out there when the Wolves are moving a little bit slower because they're now got full bellies because Aaron Donald absolutely obliterated, you know.
Poor Marcus Mariota. Yeah.
You know, poor Jalen Mayfield. But
yeah,
like,
well.
You know, like, and so I think the schedule sets up really well for, like, if you want to, you know, kick the tires on Desmond Ridder midseason against some relatively soft opponents where you expect the Falcons to be much more competitive against those teams than you're probably expecting them to be against teams like the Rams and the Bucks. The schedule kind of sets up perfectly for that. And that gives us enough that we win a couple of those games. You know, maybe that puts us out of the conversation for the top 2 picks or whatever to get a quarterback. And you're just kind of like, hey, you know, Desmond Ridder did some good things. We'll settle for Will Anderson or Jalen Carter with a top 5, top 6 pick or whatever the case may be. And we'll just keep this thing moving along. And so I like the schedule from that perspective. Again, that's not the rosiest perspective on the future of the Falcons. Hey, they're gonna be bad this year. But like, I think there's a positive outcome potentially to that. And so that's what stood out to me with the schedule.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like we said, like if they upset the Saints week 1, it's like, oh, well, they possibly could get to a winning record, you know, because the Seahawks are starting Drew Lock, so you know that's a team that's very much in transition. The Browns, it depends. Like if Deshaun Watson's playing, they're probably not winning that game. But if Deshaun Watson's suspended and they don't have Baker Mayfield, it's like, oh well, the Browns game could be winnable.
It's Jacoby Brissett, and
Brissett's not bad. So.
And really, the issue with the Browns is it doesn't really matter who the quarterback is. You got to stop Nick Chubb.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's the run game. So, and that defense is still good. So yeah.
Yeah, and we saw the last 2 games the Falcons played last year. They gave up 200 rushing yards to the Bills and the Saints. So that's really the issue that they're going to have to solve against the Browns. Necessarily know who the quarterback is going to
be. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, so it. You could squint and say like maybe they sneak in, they upset the Saints because it's a division game, anything can happen. They beat the Seahawks and they sneak in a win against the Browns, and then it's like, you know, they're probably not beating the Bucks on the road. They're probably not beating the 49ers. They're definitely not beating the Bengals on the road. But then it's like, you know, if they have a losing record at that point, you know, maybe they give Mariota a chance to beat the Panthers and then get, you know, creamed by the Chargers defense the next week. But then it's like, all right, we're going to Ridder. And then Ridder could have an easy stretch to start off his career, like the Panthers, Bears, Commanders, Steelers. Like, you know, that's, you know, this none of those teams are that imposing. I mean, the Panthers probably gonna have a good defense once again. Commanders probably gonna have a good defense once. Same with the Bears. Like, those aren't necessarily easy defenses, but I guess that would probably be the time I would be eyeing as well. Like, maybe early November, mid November, get Ridder in there for, you know, 8 games or so. Because I think they have to at some point. Like, if Ridder doesn't start at all this year, you know, Mariota better be a Pro Bowler, and this team's competing for the playoffs if Ritter's not starting any games. And I just, you know, as fun as that would be, and completely unpredictable off the wall, I mean, it would basically be like a Bengals turnaround, which, despite it happening last year, does not happen very often, folks, that you go from worst to, like, second in the entire NFL. So that doesn't happen very often. But, I mean, I think there's a chance that we could get Ritter, you know, halfway through the season. I know some people are like, oh, he's probably not going to start until like week 10 or later, but you know, we'll see. And Mariota's thing again has been health, and the Falcons really didn't do much to fix this offensive line, so you sort of wonder if they're just sending him out there to get pummeled behind Jalen Mayfield. So especially that Rams game, like, if Mariota makes it through that Rams game, prayers up, man, that's gonna be rough. So oof. But it'll be interesting. You know, I think that after they get, you know, I don't know. I don't really see them, like, having a winning record or much of a chance at a winning record. But, like, I'm sort of, if you're hopeful, I think you're hoping for, like, a sort of Lions-esque season with maybe a couple more wins mixed in, where they're sort of scrappy. You know, this team is a more balanced offense. The defense takes a step forward to being, like, maybe closer to average. The offense is also, you know, fairly average. And they just, they're playing a lot of good teams. So they're not, an average team isn't beating any of these really good teams, but they're scrappy. They play some close games. They're watchable. You know, the offense is a little scrappy. The defense is scrappy. It's watchable. You know, they don't win a ton of games. Maybe, you know, I think maybe 6 wins is sort of the ceiling, you know, maybe 7, if you're, like, really rosy with it. And, you know, I think the over under is like 5 wins. So it actually went down after the schedule came out from 5.5. So it's, you know, I certainly hope that they play well. I don't know if it'll translate. Like, I think they could have a better team than last year and have fewer wins with the schedule, which is what I think honestly will happen. Like, I think the defense will be better. I just don't think it'll be good. I think the offense will be better. I don't think it'll be, well, I don't know if the offense will be better. That's probably rich. I think the rushing attack will be better. I don't know that the passing attack will be better. Maybe about the same, but I think that they'll be a better overall team, but probably win fewer games, if that makes any sense. But, you know, before we get out of here, obviously, I got to get your guys way too early. Let's piss everyone off. Win-loss predictions. So, Aaron, I'll go to you first. What, you know, first glance, obviously, haven't had training camp, preseason, anything. First glance, what are you thinking in terms of a really, really way too early win-loss prediction?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at it like, last year, they were very competitive in games against teams with bad quarterbacks, right? Yes. Tim Boyle, Truthers, Unite, and whatnot.
That's Trevor a good Simpson. Quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but, like, I think, I'm not sure, and it gets back to kind of what you're saying, Kevin. Like, my hope is that we see them more competitive against some of these better teams, but I just honestly don't really expect them to beat the teams that have competent to good quarterback play. You know, my expectations for this team, I think they'll be better on red zone defense. I think they'll be better in terms of generating explosive plays. I don't know if they're going to be, like, so much better that it's going to completely change how this team plays and how they match up with some of these teams. As I said before, like, when you're facing teams like the Browns, like, you got to stop the run. If you can't stop the run, it's the same thing with the Saints, the same thing with the Cardinals. And I think that was a big weakness of this team. And I don't know if they've gotten significantly better in that arena. So I, you know, all that to sit here and say, I'm been kind of in the, you know, depending on my mood when I wake up, like, pessimism, 3 wins, optimistic, 5 wins. I kind of just kind of settle in 4-13 is pretty consistently, you know, going to be probably my take until we get to training camp. And depending on how, you know, if certain players surprise me or disappoint me, then I'll move off of that. But that's kind of my unofficial projection in terms of this season. But like you said, again, people hear that and say, oh, you think they're going to be terrible. No,
you're a hater. Yeah.
I just think, like, this season is not about this team beating good teams. It's about closing the gap. Like, you know, last year losing by 25 points to the Patriots, 40 points to the Cowboys. Like when we faced, you know, those caliber teams this year, is it going to be more like that Buffalo game where we were competitive and, you know, didn't we have a lead in the third quarter at a certain point? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you want to see. Not necessarily that the Falcons are actually winning these games. It's just like, can you make the strides to be competitive for two or three quarters, and so that we're all not checked out, you know, by the time we get to like 2:30 in the afternoon on Sundays, and we're like, okay, you know, what am I, seven beers deep? Like, what, you know, what do I have to do to make this last hour and a half go by reasonably well? So that's kind of the hope for me. And as you said, Kevin, I think they can be a better football team this year if it doesn't necessarily mean that they win more games.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a very, you know, reasonable take on that as well. Dave, where are you landing right now with your way too early win-loss projection?
15-2.
Hell yeah.
Let's go for it. I'm probably around like 6-11. I think that, you know, to echo what you guys said, I think this is going to be a better football team this year overall. I think we're still going to see some discouraging things because I think they are going to match up poorly against some very good teams, and they're certainly going to lose, I expect, quite a few games. But I think that the arrow is pointed in the right direction. I think there's, especially if Ridder ends up working out, right? This is a team that has more talent, has a coaching staff that has hopefully figured some things out in year two. And so what we're going to see during the season, if we're watching closely and we don't fall asleep during that Jets 8 o'clock preseason game and never wake up, is going to be really encouraging for 2023 when they have the cash to spend in that third year to build on what they've started here. So, you know, I could see as many as 8 wins if literally everything breaks right. But I think we'll probably be in that 5-6 range. And honestly, as long as they look much better than they did a year ago against some good teams on the schedule, and we start to see some progress from the defense in particular and at the quarterback position, I'll be perfectly okay with it, because, you know, we've seen losing seasons for 4 years running now where this team didn't seem to have much of a plan and didn't seem to be going much of anywhere. So the sense that, you know, there's some kind of momentum and this might be an indicator of more positive things to come is a big deal for me. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I have the same prediction right now of 6-11. You know, I'll have to see what happens in training camp, how they look in the preseason. And that would be the over based on the Vegas win total. I just think that what we saw last year with Arthur Smith, I think it's probably going to continue. Like, he's probably going to win more games than expected, just because this team is just going to play tough games especially against the less talented teams on their schedule. Like, they're going to beat bad teams probably. It doesn't mean they're a good team, but they're probably going to beat the bad teams. They did that really well last year. And I think that they might be better equipped to do that. I think that they're probably also going to struggle against the good teams, especially the really good teams. They just don't have the firepower. They don't have the infrastructure in place to keep pace with these really good teams like the Rams, like the Bucks, like the Bengals. Like, they don't have the offensive firepower to outpace those defenses, and they don't really have the defense to put the clamps on really good offensive lines. You know, we'll see if the Bengals turns into that this year. The Bucks probably will be again. You know, they obviously have to replace some pieces there. But, you know, I think, again, like, I think it'll be a better team. I don't know that will translate into more wins. I think they're probably going to lose more games. But if you're hoping for a better draft pick, that would work out great. Like, if it was a Lions season where they were sort of actually, like, the most fun, like, 3-win team you've ever seen. They were scrappy in all these games. They're playing close. You know, they just can't seem to win a lot, but they're fun and they end up with like the number 2 pick or something. Like, that would be an okay outcome if they were to lose 3 games. I just don't want this to be like they win 3 games and then they're just awful all season. Like, I really don't want that. Like, even if it means we get the number 1 pick, I don't want to be this awful team. Like, it's not worth it, guys. Trust me. I have to cover them, okay? I'm not willing to make that trade. Maybe some of you are. You can just tune out on Sunday. I cannot do that. So, you know, I think that there are encouraging signs. I think that we will be feeling good about this team going into 2023. But I don't think that's going to necessarily translate into, like, a playoff run or anything like that. But honestly, like, winning six games would be outperforming expectations. So the expectations, you don't have to get very far this year to outperform expectations based on that stuff. So, yeah, well, anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap it up? I think we've covered the basics here, but any other final games you want to touch on? Any other final takes before we sign off tonight?
No, just I would say, you know, for the folks who are, you know, all in on this team being way better this year, winning double digit games, like, I first of all, kudos. Awesome.
Yes. I wish I could still do it. I can't still do it.
I know. Yeah. If, you know, we've gone, like, I feel like I've flipped, like, for years, people were like, you're way too optimistic. And now it's the other way around. But, you know, like, if this thing goes south win wise, like, I think it's just so important to keep an eye on that progress and see where this team ends up, because, like, that's what's going to make it worth watching this year. Even if they do surprise and win a bunch of games, like, they have a hard ceiling this year, I think, with their talent level. But that might not be the case as soon as next year. So, like, let's enjoy the ride and hope for good things.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're thinking that they're making, like, a winning record, it's probably because either Mariota or Ritter hits the ground running and is, like, this revelation at quarterback. That's the only path I can see, is that, you know, Ritter, it probably more likely to be Ritter. Like, Ritter just has like he's just hits the ground running. He's a good rookie. He's a good rookie quarterback. He's like everything you ever wanted to see, you know, sort of a Russell Wilson versus Mike Flynn situation where he just sort of like quickly surpasses him and is just all gravy from there. But, as fun as that would be for me, who is very much Team Ritter, I don't think that's very likely to happen, but I will leave the door open for that as a possibility. So yeah, Aaron, anything else you want to add before we sign off?
Yeah. Like, I'll kind of piggyback on that point you just made. Like, to me, their path to way outperforming my expectations, and I think a lot of people's expectations, is they get good quarterback play, whether you think that's Mariota or Ritter based, and Kyle Pitts and Drake London are just great. And Bryan Edwards is much better than, you know, Mohamed Sanu-esque, as I put earlier in this episode. And they're just basically a team, and Cordero Patterson does his thing, and Tyler Algier is, you know, James Robinson 2.0 or Najee Harris 2.0 or something like that. Again, I think all those outcomes are possible. I don't think they're likely, especially once you need to get all of those things to happen in order for this team to really be cooking. Because, like, yeah, it's just going to be tough for them, given their inability to probably keep pace with some of these higher powered offenses that they're going to face this year. But I think that is the path, right? Where these new faces on offense just come in and hit the ground running, and, you know, Arthur Smith and his play calling and all these various things are just so much better going into this year than they were last year. And that's your path to this team being more than just a scrappy, you know, team with a losing record. That's a team that legitimately, when we get into December, is a team in the playoff chase. So it's possible. Again, as I always say, set your expectations low and let the Falcons exceed those expectations, because we've all been there when we've had high expectations for the Falcons and been disappointed. And I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm just like, I'm tired of being disappointed by the Falcons. So I will let them exceed my expectations, as opposed to setting myself up for another massive disappointment, as is the case. So that's my recommendation for everybody out there. But I think there is a path for them to be successful, but you just need some of these boxes to get checked, all of them to get checked. And if they can do that, I think they can be a very, very scrappy football team this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the offensive line is the other piece of that too. Like, if they could add like a legitimate left guard veteran signing, I think I'd feel a lot better. But so far they have refused to do that. So then it's like, we're probably like praying that Jalen Mayfield somehow works his way into being like an average starter. And I just, that would be such like it's like, oh, just being an average starter, that's not so bad. But when you're like the worst left guard in the NFL to get to average starter, like, that's a big jump. We've talked about on the show, he probably has a better chance than like an average player of reaching that for all the things we talked about, right? Like, position switch, change sides, thrown to the fire, all that stuff. But like, it's still a big ask. You know, I think between Dolman and Hennessy, it'll be okay at center, but I think left guard is the one that's really concerning. So, if they don't add a veteran, you know, we're just going to have to pray for Jalen Mayfield to be something better, drastically better than what he was last year. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good I think the offensive players are. If that is just once again a turnstile at left guard, then it's they're going to have a bad time out there. So, but yeah, guys, really appreciate everyone coming in and dropping your record prediction as well. Those of you predicting 10 plus wins, you guys are awesome. So good for you. Yeah, that's Jeff's kiss. So I really hope you're right. You know, I do. I think that would be really fun for the Falcons to end up being that great team, because it probably means they hit on Ritter and that the offensive line came together and everything that we ever hoped for is coming to fruition. So, you know, I would certainly be open to that happening. I just generally, like Aaron said, we're used to getting our hopes and dreams, you know, trodden on pretty much on the regular. So, you know, that would be a great outcome, but not something that I necessarily expected. But we really appreciate you guys. Yes, I did see the fake tweet about Debo getting traded for Asante Samuel Jr. I did see that. But yeah, that was not true. So, you know, that should, the fact that the trade compensation was just a straight up trade for like a really good corner on a rookie contract for a really overpaid linebacker should probably, and the fact that it was announced before June 1st should have been a dead giveaway more than anything else. Cause they literally can't do a post June 1st trade until after June 1st. That's sort of the way it goes. So, but you know, prayers up for everyone that fell for it. So, yeah, guys, really appreciate everyone for tuning in. Like I said, like it, subscribe, please check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Those of you that are listening to the podcast or are interested in checking out our podcast, it's the Falcoholic Podcast, available on all your favorite podcast platforms. Yeah, before we take off, I want to thank our co-hosts tonight. First of all, we have with us Aaron Freeman. He is at Falc Fans, host of the Locked On Falcons podcast. Aaron, anything you'd like to plug before we take off tonight?
You know, when people are done watching this episode on YouTube, head on over to Locked On Falcons and watch the episode there that I dropped tonight talking about Arthur Smith and the idea of tanking and whatnot. And they have Thor Nystrom, a guest here on Falcoholic Live in the past, coming on to talk a little bit about Drake London. So check that out tomorrow on Locked On Falcons. Be doing my Arnold Ebiketie scouting report, so people can look forward to my breakdown of his game Thursday night on YouTube, Friday morning on your preferred podcast platform. And of course, Locked On Falcons is, you know, coming at you 5 days a week, pretty much till training camp. There may be a lull in June. So if you're needing Falcon content when things really start to die down in the next couple of weeks or whatever the case may be, Locked On Falcons is going to be there for you.
This man producing 5 episodes a week in June. I, you know, just doing the Lord's work over there. So that's when it gets really hard. During the season, not so bad. You know, during draft season, not so bad. June is where it really starts to hurt. So.
Well, Kevin, I might lean on you to come and help me out.
Do some heavy lifting there,
because I'll be done with takes by that point.
A little bit, yeah. Takes are exhausted at a certain point. So yeah, thanks for coming on, Aaron. Appreciate you. Also with us tonight, the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate at the Falcoholic. Dave, anything you'd like to plug?
No, just, you know, stick with us through May and June. We will find plenty to talk about, despite everything. Kicking off the Falcons trivia series again, which either you're like, great, or you're like, who cares? And either way, thanks.
How dare you publish this?
Yeah. Come on by the side. I don't care how you feel about it. That's fine.
Just click. Just click, please. Yeah.
But I know we have some good stuff coming. You know, looking at some of the prospects, we're going to be continuing to do our roster breakdowns and probably getting to some camp battles a little bit early, because we're eager to have that to talk about. So,
oh yeah, never too early.
No, never too early to talk tight end four. So.
Hell yeah, that's what I really get up for.
That's so where we're going.
John soon. Fitzpatrick versus Parker Hesse versus, you know, my man Daniel Helm already got cut, so I'm gonna have to rearrange my depth chart there. But
Tucker Fisk, he's coming.
He's the new Parker Hesse, former defensive lineman. So that'll be a June show for sure. Tucker Fisk.
Well, I got like 2 episodes out of Tucker Fisk coming in June. So
okay, that's great. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Did he lose weight? He's listed at like 285. Is that
accurate? Is that true? Yeah. I don't know. That'd be crazy. That would be the thick,
love to
the
see
thick
him play
tight end.
Tight end at 285.
Like, well, that was Leroy Watson too. Another UDFA. He was like 285. Played tight end at UTSA, but they're converting him to tackle. So, which last I think makes sense. Yeah.
Last time the Falcons had a tight end that bid, I think was Eric Beverly. Oh, man. And they moved him from the offensive line. He was like 300 pounds, and he played tight end for us in like 03, 04. Dave, you can correct me on that.
No, I think that's right. And it was glorious. We should
add. I'm all for thick tight ends. Like, that is that's totally fine with me.
Thick with four C's, right?
Yeah, you need a lot. Yeah, for 285 plus, you definitely need at least three or four to get that done. But, yeah, guys, I really appreciate everyone for tuning in. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. Like Dave said, check out the site. Check out the Falcoholic podcast as well, which I have officially assumed the mantle of. And, yeah, go click on those episodes, too, because that helps me. So even if you don't have to listen to the whole thing, just listen to the first 2 minutes, you know, that whatever, that helps. So, you know, go click on all your favorite podcast platforms. And it should be that the stuff that I put on the feed, I'm going to try to make videos at the same time, because it turns out, you know, when I record it, I can just press record on OBS too, like what I'm sure Aaron's doing for his show, you know, and you get two pieces of content out of it. So if you prefer video, it'll be up here on the YouTube, and if you prefer audio, it'll be on the podcast platforms. You can go back and forth, you can watch both, you know, whatever you want. Maybe you want to hear it twice. Hey, it's all good. I don't judge. Sometimes it's June and we just need to listen to anything, even if, you know, I do that myself. Sometimes I listen to the podcast even though I was literally on it, so yeah, you know, it happens. I don't judge. So
when you get a collection of voices like this together, sometimes you just want to hear it again.
You do. It's just like music to my ears, you know. And everyone knows I love to hear myself talk because I do solo podcasts, so that's the surest sign. So
I know all about that life, Kevin.
Oh yeah, Aaron knows for sure. But yeah, guys, really appreciate everyone for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you, guys. We will be back next Wednesday for the next episode of Falcoholic Live. Probably lighter on the news, I would assume. You know, I'm leaving the door open for other moves, certainly, but probably lighter on the news. Yeah, we'll have some OTAs to talk about soon, so that'll be at least moderately interesting. I'm just kidding, guys. It'll be so interesting. You have to come back next Wednesday to make sure to hear those riveting OTA takes. But yeah, guys, thank you so much. We will be back, like I said, next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Thanks to Dave and for Aaron. Tonight, we will see you guys next time on the Falcoholic Live. Have a great night.